my favorite part of the Percy Jackson series is messaging Red and saying, hey, I know how much you hate them, but try to stay calm.
Stifle your rage for but a moment.
Whoa, Red, calm down. Cage the beast.
She tried to kill you just for asking the question.
Hello and welcome to a very special Oops All Percy Jackson bonus episode of the Overly Sarcastic Podcast. We're your regular hosts. I don't usually talk as part of the podcast. Hello, it's Indigo. I'm also joined by Red.
Hello. Notorious Percy Jackson hater, as everybody knows. I had to be dragged to this one.
And Blue.
My fire alarm went off twice in the process of starting recording this podcast. We're doing great.
Look, we didn't ask to be a half-blood.
And we have a couple extra special guests, experts in the field of Percy Jackson. Guys, go ahead and tell us who you
That's
are.
That's a lot of pressure.
Follow our general adaptations.
Who we got?
I'll rise to the occasion. My name is Mike Schubert. I host the News Olympian, a Percy Jackson podcast. Woo. But I've only read each book once, so expert is a stretch. But the concept of the show is I never read them as a kid, so that's why. But I'll take on the expert thing. I read them with a fine-tooth comb.
I'm Dominic Noble. I'm sort of a BookTube adjacent creator.
BookTube adjacent, Dom, you're OG BookTube. Give yourself some credit.
You founded BookTube, basically.
I can't be a part of it because I've read a shockingly few amount of books is what I've learned in my time here. But.
So you would think, but as someone established as book podcaster that's read each book once, you can find a way.
That's more than I've read most of the books because I've only read the original set of Percy Jackson books, which...
I mean, samesies, so...
Also same, unless you count the spinoffs.
We're going to be mostly answering Q&A from you, the listeners, on this podcast about Percy Jackson. But before we get into that, why don't we just go around the table and say what pieces and variations of Percy Jackson media we've consumed to kind of give our credentials here. Mine are easy, so I'm just gonna kick it off. I read the books as a kid. I read the five Percy Jackson series books, and I've seen the movies, and because I edit Dom's videos, I've seen the TV series as well.
Red hit us.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I had to like look up the dates because I remember I got into it before the Titans Curse came out. So it was just Lightning Thief and Sea of Monsters. And I remember I was just working under the assumption that it was going to be a trilogy. So when the Titans Curse dropped, I was so excited. And then I read through it and I was like, well, that didn't answer most of it. I mean, it was good, but like Kronos is still out there. I was like, oh, more. We're getting more. So that was cool. And I looked that up and it came out in 2007. So I got into this early. I must have been like 10, which is the perfect age to be reading Percy Jackson because you are exactly the same age as the main characters, which I think was really the move. I read through all of them. I started on the Roman series, the sequel stuff, and I sort of lost interest. It wasn't written first person. It just didn't grab me as much. It was fun seeing Percy from the outside because from the inside perspective of Percy's head, he's just like always panicking all the time. He's just like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Everything is scary. Nothing makes sense. And then from the outside, it's like, that's Perseus Jackson, son of the sea god. He blew up a volcano that one time, slayed Kronos. He's so scary. I was like, yeah, that's my boy. Put some respect on his fucking name. So that was cool. Yes, I've also regrettably seen the movies. I've seen the first one like 3 times at this point.
Why?
Because people keep putting me on podcasts to talk about it.
Oh, fair enough.
I need to do my homework. I've listened through the musical, which is good. And I just watched through all of the show. Well, all of season one of the show, which is all that exists right now. And I liked it, but we're going to get to that, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Mike, what are your credentials?
So, yeah, as I mentioned, I started the News Olympian in 2021, and it was me going through, and still is me going through everything for the very first time. So I never read them as a kid. I started reading them, I guess I was, I was 29, so very much past the target age group. But I still really enjoyed it, never felt like I was reading a kid's book. I would highly recommend, if adults have not read them, just to read them. Like, if you want, like, a fun beach read, instead of reading, like, romance she romanced and murder he murdered, like, just read young adult books. It's great. Like, I very much enjoyed the books. So I made my way through all of those, and then I saw the movies, which were awful. And then I watched the TV show, which was fantastic. I was fortunate enough where I got to do like some press stuff as well. So I got to like interview some people in production. I got to understand a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that went into the show, which has been really fun. And then very recently I watched the musical, or I allegedly watched a slime tutorial, allegedly, of the musical, allegedly. I tried to do the thing like where the New York Public Library is supposed to have a recording of anything that's ever been on Broadway, but they apparently didn't have an archival for it. So yeah, I've seen the musical. And then some of the spin-off books that are still like Percy Jackson only I have read. So things like Demigods and Monsters, The Demigod Files, The Ultimate Guide, nothing that would spoil. But I, as of yesterday, just started reading The Lost Hero, which is the first book of Heroes of Olympus. So I'm only just barely getting into the sequel territory.
I read one of the books once. That was back when I was a baby fledgling YouTuber. Percy Jackson was the first request I have actually had from a fan. Back when I had like 16 subscribers, so I covered the first two movies, and then I kind of just kept reading the books because I'd gotten addicted to them at that point.
They're very grabby.
Yeah. Then, I don't know. I think the only other claim to Percy Jacksondom I have is that I spent a good like 3 hours talking to the people who run the camp in New York last VidCon. First VidCon we all went to.
I think that was in Austin, actually.
Okay.
Camp Half-Blood Austin, yeah.
I've met those folks as well. They are incredibly nice.
They're really
nicest
great.
People.
Yeah.
So sweet.
So then I back when there was Storylines on YouTube, I had this one character who I then sort of retired into the Percy Jackson universe, which, so, like, I think I'm just here as the sort of token casual.
No, I think there's a lot to discuss, considering the show just came out, and it is, of course, an adaptation, which is very much your speed.
That's my... Yes. That's
easy to get lost
I mean, my favorite part of the Percy Jackson series is messaging Red and saying, hey, I know how much you hate them, but try to stay calm.
Stifle your rage for but a moment.
Calm down. Whoa, Red, calm down. Cage the beast.
It was very
fun. She tried
fun
to kill
doing...
you just for asking the question.
It was fun doing a little Ovid research for the discussion of the episodes, because... we'll get to it, I'm sure, but they change a little bit of how they do Medusa, and you were like, so how legit is this? And I was like, oh, well, you could dig into the original like Latin if you wanted. You're like, maybe. And I was like, so I dug into the original Latin.
Yes. I have to be careful what questions I ask Red, because she will do several hours of research.
it was barely an
That's
hour.
That's the joy. I mean, I've had Red on a couple times to do mythology episodes, and the amount of resource, because after I finish the books, I do like myth specific episodes, like here's all the stuff they talked about, what's the longer versions, and it was the first time we had to do two episodes about one book's worth of myths. It was perfect, to be fair. I think it was like either book four or five where there was a ton of stuff, so
it
like
was four,
it was yeah four, which was like super valid, but lots of research. I appreciated it.
I podcast easily because it's hard to make me stop talking.
No one has done longer episodes of Movie Struck than Red.
Nature's podcasters
try and take my crown.
For me, my experience with Percy Jackson started when the first book came out, and when my parents were trying to get me into reading, they're like, oh, like, you know, Little Blue, there's this book called The Lightning Thief, and I'm like, whatever, I don't care. And then 2 years later, Titan's Curse came out, and I was like, oh, wait, this sounds like it's cool. Then I went back and read the first three of them. When the fourth book came out, I had the great pleasure of meeting Rick Riordan on the booktuber at one of the local libraries in the city that he came to, which was super fun. He's so nice. I got to hear him talk. I got to take a little picture with him somewhere in the archives of old photos on my dad's computer. There's a picture of me in a little camouflage coat standing next to Rick Riordan. It was great. And then I read the fifth book when it came out. I felt myself distinctly like over the comedy hill on that one. That was the first time I noticed like, oh, these are no longer for me. And that was a crushing realization to come to as a like, what, 14-year-old? I'm like, oh, have I aged out of this? I am 0 years old functionally in like media
even
standards.
If you,
but
it's tricky with Percy Jackson, because even if you are the same age as him, you're still kind of aged out of the humor because he's such a 90s kid, even though the books came out in the 2000s. Like, the first time I realized was in the first book, he's at Camp Half-Blood. It's like, I kept expecting people to jump out and say, not! And I'm like, oh. Oh God. Oh, okay.
You are the son of Hades, not.
Not.
Wow. Yeah,
like, a whole different kind of mythology you have to know to understand the humor of the 90s.
It was a crushing realization to be like, oh, I would have laughed at this a couple years ago, but I no longer find this funny. But I was like, it's okay. It's still really good books. I enjoyed them a lot. I didn't read any of the spinoffs or subsequent series. I think I got like 2 pages into the Roman series and I'm like, nah. I watched the first movie when it came out. Yeah, exactly. No. Didn't watch the second. And then I am now here having seen the series. I'm ready to talk about some Percy Jackson. So with all of our various backgrounds established, how about we hop over to the audience Q&A and start getting into the details here?
Woo-hoo. Yeah, well, these questions come from our lovely listeners over on Discord and Ask OS Pod. We asked you to submit Percy Jackson questions, and boy, did you provide. This first one is going to come from one of our lovely patrons, as well a few others. Usually we just do one patron question at the top, but because so many of you had Qs, we're going to give you a bunch of As. This one comes from Ebony Andy. For the Percy Jackson episode, to all, we were all either assigned or self-assigned ourselves our godly parent when we were in our youths and reading the books for the first time. I was under the impression that for most of my childhood that I was a kid of Apollo. Which god would you want to have as one half of your parentage, and what powers do you think they would give you? We have to do this. We have to just get this out of the way, right?
Oh, yeah, got it.
This was such a funny thing, because, of course, I felt that itch, but I kept running into the problem that I like both my parents and didn't really conceive of either of them as being, like, swappable out with a Greek deity of any kind. So I unfortunately reached the conclusion, like, no, this just wouldn't make sense. But Hunters of Artemis accept all takers. So that was definitely my cop-out answer.
Yeah. Very nice.
Okay.
Yeah, I've done a few of the Percy Jackson quizzes and stuff. Some more simple. Like, I think the official Riordan one is, like, one of those you can exactly tell what answer you're going to get. Like, what's your favorite color? Do you like hanging out at the ocean or the mountain? But I've taken a few, and I've gotten Poseidon multiple times, which I think tracks.
Good sign.
But nice. I think I've also had some other ones that I've been interested in. Like, I think there is always an appeal for Artemis. There is always an appeal for Athena. So, I don't know. I don't feel, like, as strong as you for say like a Harry Potter house or something, but I would say for now Poseidon, but I'm still, you know, always open to seeing how things develop as I continue my way through the series.
Don, how about you?
I have been wearing a Hecate necklace all the way through the Percy Jackson reviews to see who notices, because they can sons and daughters of Hecate can still do magic. So I want to turn people into guinea pigs. That seems like the logical one to go with. So that's what I've been. I've not done a quiz or anything. So maybe I'd get like Dionysus or some loser like that. But I'm going with Hecate for now.
Nice. This is gonna sound obnoxious because it is, and I'm leaning in for the purpose of this answer. My family on my maternal side is from Athens. We go fucking back, y'all. So if I'm not representing Athena, I am disrespecting my bloodline.
Very fair. I feel like as a kid I would have said Athena, but yeah, now I've grown. One of those, you know, losers like Dionysus would probably be my favorite. Just because, like, powers-wise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I got tummy issues. I'd like to be able to drink and feel better about
it. He'll choke you with vines and shit. So
Dionysus, yeah, that's
neat
too.
I feel like he's got some good powers.
Turn you into dolphins.
You can have a little fun with it. There's a lot of it's the like wild magic of the Greek pantheon.
True.
In some ways.
The joy of Poseidon magic. If I am having him as my godly parent, and we're going with the Percy Jackson powers, is not only do you get the cool stuff like water powers and stuff, but you also get the cool like mundane ones that are really helpful, like your clothes don't get wet and stuff.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Imagine all the time I would save by just like taking, you know, not having to dry after taking a shower. You never have to have the wet sock feeling. Like, yeah.
Ooh,
baby.
That's big.
Like,
being able to breathe underwater would do a lot
be incredible.
Fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also the horse stuff.
Horse stuff. That's pretty cool.
A horse.
Mm-hmm.
And they do also lean into the more like older Poseidon as earthquake god thing, which I think is fun, because when he sets off the volcano, they're kind of like, yeah, he can kind of just do that. Let's not piss him off, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, does we only have one son of Poseidon in the series, but the whole point of
Tyson.
It is...
Well, Tyson.
And all the other Cyclopses, but...
Half-blood mortal human
demigod
thing.
Yeah.
Is it confirmed that every son of Poseidon gets all the cool water powers, or is Percy a special boy?
So it isn't, because Procrustes is also a son of Poseidon. And I feel like there's a couple other heroes turned immortal monster
Procrustes is half-giant, half-god, isn't he?
Maybe? It's been a hot minute.
According to Wikipedia,
I would not know.
In Percy Jackson, he's regular human-sized. Like, he's just like a dude.
Everyone has like a human form, yeah.
And there's also that guy whose name escapes me, but he is half giant, and as long as he touches the earth, he can't be killed.
Oh, right. And, oh, yes.
Is he in the sequels? Because I don't remember him.
No, he's in the arena in Battle of the Labyrinth. He's got the cool like waves etched into his teeth and the tattoos and stuff.
Yeah.
Sick. Oh, yeah.
He's one of the guys that Heracles fought at some point. He had to basically kill him by picking him up off the ground and then crushing him like a soda can.
Does Polyphemus show up in Sea of Monsters?
Antaeus. And yes, Polyphemus does show up. He is the like main bad at the end of Sea of Monsters.
Well, because Sea of Monsters is just Odyssey Redux.
Yeah.
That was the most one-for-one parody, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, the first book, Lightning Thief, is like an overland journey, and in book two, they stop pretending.
I think it was Titan's Curse after that, which was more original, but also probably the least engaging of the original book series, I thought.
Titan's Curse started playing around with some more, like, broader concepts, because that's when you start getting the Hesperides as, like, the main thing, which is kind of neat. Again, it was sort of Labors of Heracles light, because it involved the Nemean Lion and a whole bunch of other, like, Herculean trials for them to cross. But yeah, that was definitely... Probably, if Sea of Monsters is the most one-for-one, Titan's Curse is one of the least. Yeah. But, yeah.
Well, we've drifted from the premise of the question, so we're going to go hit us with another.
I suspect that will happen many times over the course of this episode, but this question comes from Mr. Mystery. To all, we know that the movies are not the best critically, but what are some of the adaptations that they made that you preferred? For example, I quite liked the Clicky Pen Sword as well as the movie Medusa scene. So, positives.
We have to compliment the movies.
I will say that the use of Lady Gaga's poker face is incredible, would no notes on that.
I mean, Nathan Fillion is a fun Hermes in the second one. He is so different from the vibe of what actually happens in the book. I feel like Moody Lin-Manuel Miranda hits way more accurate.
Yeah.
But
I
Nathan
really
Fillion is still
Lin-Manuel
very
Miranda's
fun.
Portrayal.
Yeah, I was very happy with
everyone
with how
dunks
Lin
on Lin-Manuel Miranda. He is legitimately, everything I've seen him in, he's been good. He's in the new DuckTales, and he has such a fun time.
He's just, I think people dislike his off-camera cringe, and they let that cloud that he is incredibly talented.
Kill the part of
kind of
cringes.
Suffers from like the effect of, well, big studio has realized that his style of songwriting and performance is connecting with people, so now we're going to just try and imitate that and put that everywhere, and it becomes an exposure therapy issue. Like, you can only hear so much of it before you're like, it's a Lin-Manuel
Miranda sound. It's
definitely
not his fault.
It's not his fault at all. He's still very talented.
Yeah, and he did a damn good job. Like, I was expecting him to, because like sometimes you're like, oh, this person disappears into the role, and sometimes it's like, that's an actor. Like, that's fully Christopher Walken. There's no character there. That's just Christopher Walken. Lin-Manuel Miranda, I worried would be the case with that, but it's like, no, he's fucking Hermes. He's in it. He does a great job. But we're talking about the movie.
I was somewhat blinded with his scene because all I was thinking was, oh God, they're doing the gosh, I love my mortal children so damn much thing again, which was my main complaint with the way they portrayed the gods in the Disney Plus adaptation was... It's, you know, like I said, I don't doubt that the gods did love their children in the books, but it felt like it was a subtler way that they showed it, or it was a more complicated way, whereas every bloody god in the series just like, oh God, I wish I could hang out with my boy!
Well, not Athena.
Not yet.
Notably.
Not actively.
She's like, what if
like,
actually
die.
Fuck
except
you?
For, yeah, because fuck Athena.
Yeah. I think that, like, the way that they portrayed Poseidon and Hermes is, like, true to the way that the books... to be clear, we're talking about the show still. We'll get back to the question in a bit. But, like,
everyone trying to avoid talking about the movies at all possible.
We're stalling because there's nothing good to say about them.
I'm sure I'll think
movies.
Of something. But, the thing is, like, Poseidon being like, I want to hang out with Percy, I want to help him, but I'm actually prevented. Like, that's fine. And I love his actor. I think that he did such a good job of getting the vibe
Toby Stevens in the show.
Yeah, and the stuff that they added with him and Sally, I thought that was possibly one of the best scenes of the show.
It was great.
And I liked, because the thing is, when we meet Hermes in the books, I think that they managed to shrink down in microcosm his entire personality in the books, where he is very much like, what's up, I'm chill and fun, how do you do, fellow kids? And then as soon as somebody brings up Luke, he's like, listen, you don't get hurtful like that. Okay, look, I fucking tried my best. All right, it's really hard to be a parent. And I was like, perfect. We got all of that in the space of about 5 minutes. I love it. And I love the part where it's like, I stole his keys. And then it's like, he knew I stole my keys. He left us a note. It's just like, good. Yes, he's the God of Thieves. This is all pitch perfect. So the movies.
The movies.
Yeah.
I'm just Googling the movie looking for a scene that I didn't hate.
I remember one thing. Because I did like a live watch along at one point on Twitter when I was watching Lightning Thief for like the second time for some fucking reason. And I did remember noticing, like, in the context of the movie and the way they're fucking up Luke's characterization, there was one moment they added that I thought was effective for what they were trying to do with him. Which is, of course, in the books, Luke is a little bit kind of cackling villain and a little bit, like, deeply sympathetic, and I like that the show leaned much more on the deeply sympathetic angle, and I think that was a good change. But in the movie, they went more, like, cackling villain kind of thing, especially at the end. And he's got the bolt, and he's got his winged shoes, and he's flying over New York, and he thinks he's got Percy, like, out of commission, so he's just about to start his reign of terror. And there's a civilian helicopter flying overhead, and he just wordlessly, like, aims the bolt at it before Percy tackles him out of the sky. And I was like, that is good villain characterization. That is a good way to show. He's not like, and now I shall destroy the hostages. He's just, as far as he's concerned, he's already won. This is just for shits and gigs. And he's immediately like, I'm going to start shooting lightning at random people. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. like no pretense of I'll do a better job than Zeus. Just immediately, like, let's just start killing dudes. And I thought that was an effective way to characterize the way they did Luke in the movie. It was probably the only thing that they did that I thought was, like, decently okay. Like, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Luke studied at the civilians or bonus points driving school of divine smiting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I feel like the problem is the few things that I enjoyed from the first two movies were, like, things that were just then done better in the show. Like, mm-hmm. Stanley Tucci as Mr. D is kind of fun in Sea of Monsters, but then Jason Mantzoukas as Mr. D is, like, good. Absolutely perfect yeah. in the TV show.
Let Jason Mantzoukas play Greek characters.
I cannot wait for him to go off the fucking chain in the later seasons, because
it's gonna be
all that potential is there, but he doesn't really do anything in The Lightning Thief. He's just mildly intimidating, gets Percy's name wrong a lot, and it's like, just let me see the madness behind his eyes. I've seen him on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I know what he's capable.
Yeah. Titans Curse, Jason Mantzoukas, Mr. D is going to rip. It's going to be really fun. So I really don't know if there's anything that I would say, oh, the movie did this better. Like, there were still some things that were fun, but I just can't think of one.
We already brought up the sword, but they put more effort into the sword transformation in the movie, especially in the second one. They actually see the whole motherfucker unfolding, which is really cool. Yeah. One thing I noticed about Disney Plus is, aside from the first time, Percy is always uncapping his pen off screen.
So
it's
just kind of
like pen, hand off screen, sword in hand. It's like, fuckers.
I usually don't notice those kinds of things. Like, I'm very rare to notice bad CGI or stuff like that, but I noticed, like, they show the transformation once, and it's always Percy uncaps it, we cut to someone's reaction, and we cut back, and he's got the sword. I'm like, you know what? Spend your budget where you need to, but, like, also, goddammit, you're Disney, come on.
Yeah, where's that Disney money going?
Yeah. I had, in the scene that I hated the most out of The Lightning Thief, which was all the stuff that happened in the underworld, I have to say, I liked the aesthetic they gave to Hades before they just turned him into biblically accurate Lucifer light, where they were like, he's an aging rock star, let's do that. I thought that was fun. And to be honest, this might be a hot take, I like that aesthetic more than I like what they did with Hades in the show. Because in the show, he's very, like, he's kind of like halfway to Disney Hercules, you know, used car salesman Hades.
Fuck, I didn't make that connection, because I only watched, like, the Disney's Hercules once, but you're absolutely right. He's got that sort of smarmy, quick-talking.
Yeah.
But then that's kind of how he is in the book. Like, in the book,
which
he's
book
like,
did you read?
The Lightning Thief by Rick Riordan. I feel like he has a little bit of the sass, but not, like, full-fledged. Like, I always felt like, when I had read this, that he was halfway between Hades, the video game Hades, and Disney Hercules Hades, where, like, he had the intimidating element, like when Percy says, he's the only god that really felt like a god to me. And then he does still have, like, the little bit of, like, quirky humor. And then he also has, which I think tracks for both of them, he's disgruntled at Charon for asking for a raise in the book, and I feel like that checks both of the boxes. But he never felt, like, full comedy all the way to Disney's Hercules Hades, and I think that that's the problem in the show, is that in the show I still liked him, and I think they did a good job of the humor, but we didn't get as much of the intimidating. So I can see, Red, why you would think it felt like just shy of going full Hercules, because they didn't have the, like, empowering thing. I think what they were trying to go for the show is kind of what he is in the first book too, which is, like, you just assume that Hades is going to be the bad guy, and Percy assumes it, and Chiron assumes it, and everyone's like, well, it's clearly Hades. And I think that the show leaned a little too far into just being like, well, let's just make him so what you wouldn't expect, to where I think some of the intimidation was lost that was there in the book but wasn't in the show.
That was kind of my vibe, because I really liked that in the books, Hades is the only god who doesn't bother to pretend that he's like not a god under any circumstances. Like, I don't remember, it's been a while since I read them, but I feel like it's like he's like large, still doing the toga.
He's in his 12-foot form, and he's wearing a cloak made of human faces.
Exactly. So like he's not fucking around. He's like, I'm Hades, Lord of the Underworld. And what I like about that is that in the book, when Percy first shows up in the Underworld, Hades does not disabuse him of the notion that he's the main villain until he starts talking about the helm. Like, Hades is not in it to impress him or change his mind. He's just like, give me back my shit, you little asshole. And he's obviously not going to be nice about it. So when they turn that around in the show, I think of the gods we met in the show, he was the one that just kind of hit me the least, just kind of washed over me. I think the way they did Zeus was incredible. I think Poseidon was top tier. Hermes was good. Dionysus was fine. They just didn't give him very much to do. And then with Hades, I was like, this is all right, but I need to believe that this is the kind of Lord of the Dead Ghost King character that Nico can have all of his issues about later.
That's the thing. I'm holding off judgment for now because I feel like people are doing the thing where they're looking at full series Hades and not like book one Hades. And I don't know that you're like, I think you're still right, but I think like Hades is at his angriest in the Demigod Files and in book five. Like when we really get the Nico stuff into play, that's where he gets like really angry, especially when we get into more like the backstory of Maria D'Angelo. So I'm like waiting to see how this iteration does it once we get to like truly angry Hades before I say like, I don't know that they're going to hit it.
Right.
And maybe it's just a Lightning Thief versus later series stuff. So I'm in the like, let them cook pause and see how they do it before I get angry at them for messing it up.
No, of course.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like, we're dancing around talking about the TV series. Let's get a couple questions in that are just about that.
Wait. I do want to give one point on the subject of the Underworld. In the movie, one thing they did I really liked, Persephone, Rosario Dawson's Persephone, speaks to Cerberus in Greek. I liked that. She says, like, Fia, get out of here.
I think that also she looked great. She seemed to be having a good time.
She shouldn't have been there, but she was having a good
there
time.
In summer.
The way that they wrote Persephone is horrible, and the accidental implications of like, oh, we're getting the pearls because Persephone uses them to bring in all of her lovers who she fucks. And it's like, this is for children.
Including Grover.
And Medusa, but I don't think, I fully believe the screenwriters just did not consider the implications of having one of the pearls be in Medusa's custody.
I genuinely
believe that they were just like, they need to get it from Auntie M's Garden Emporium.
They didn't think through regarding Medusa, like, oh yes, I used to date your dad.
To be honest, I didn't hate that line mostly because Uma Thurman was just clearly having a fucking good time.
Yeah, that's another one where like Uma was so campy, it was great. Yeah, the iPod is really fun.
The
like,
most unrealistic part of that is that it wasn't too covered in fingerprints to be usable.
He like wipes it on his pants first and then he tries it.
Like, okay,
there's
we're
some
good.
Fun stuff in the movies, but the show just like did it better. So it's hard to say it's preferred, but yeah, that Medusa scene, Uma's great.
She's just vibing.
Uma is fantastic.
I was kind of expecting her to do more stuff than just be like, maybe you should open your eyes and look at me. Like, I was like, are you going to do anything evil? Just going to say that. Anyway.
Sort of related to that, thoughts on how they handled monsters like Medusa and Echidna in the Disney Plus show from Cayman. Thoughts on the Greek monsters that show up in season one?
I mean, no complaints about Echidna, the way they handle it in Disney Plus. They made she was fucking awesome.
Yeah. Suzanne Cryer's great.
I think the way they did Medusa was interesting because it looked like they were going to do something else, and then it looks like they changed their minds because Reardon almost always defaults to using the Ovid version of the gods when he's drawing on storytelling. Ovid is one of the best consolidated sources of a lot of Greek myths. He's got some authorial bias and he has some ideas that don't seem to have shown up in earlier versions, but generally that's what Reardon defaults to. And Ovid is the first source that I could find that has the idea that the Gorgon Medusa was once a beautiful mortal woman who was slighted and horribly hurt by the gods, and now she's this monster. Gorgons are very old. They show up in the Theogony, in the big family tree of all the monsters. They are just offspring of monsters. The idea that one of them is mortal and the other two are immortal, I think, is a little bit older than Ovid, but the idea that one of them used to be a normal human woman, that's different. I think in the art before Ovid, you were starting to get hot Gorgons. You're starting to get beautiful women with snake hair, which is not the same thing as this was once a normal-ass human lady who became
girl boss gatekeep Gorgon.
Oh, no!
Blue, what have you done? What cannot be undone?
Hey, I get that reference. Anyway, so I think that Riordan was like, okay, we're using the Ovid version. The problem is, in the Ovid version, Poseidon assaulted Medusa in Athena's temple. Like, they usually translate it to be vaguer. They'll be like, oh, they lay together. But I looked up the Latin, and I was like, that word has connotations, unfortunately.
I think that's what I came to you for advice from. I was like, I am walking on eggshells here, Rick. Can you, like, what exactly happened between these two in the version he's looking at? Because I know there's several different versions of everything, but... from what you told me, it was pretty explicit.
It was pretty cut and dry. They tried to tone it down when they translated it various times, probably because they just didn't want to, you know, use really uncomfortable words. But, like, in the version that Ovid told, it was a dual injustice. Poseidon assaults Medusa and Athena curses her. And it's just a huge dick move. And the problem is Poseidon and Athena are the parents of our heroes. And if they are complicit in anything like that, they immediately become irredeemable, basically. Like, this is just awful, awful, awful. So I was worried because before I watched the show, you came to me with this and I was like looking it up and I was like, well, I kind of hope he doesn't imply that Poseidon did that because I don't think any amount of, you know, fun dad moments is going to make me forget that we're canonizing the Ovid version. So when I watched the show, I was kind of pleasantly surprised because in that one, they tone it down to just make Athena the bad guy, where it's just that Poseidon is complicit in not protecting her from Athena. But in this version, Poseidon loves Medusa. They're like, she's his mortal lover. And she's like, he didn't protect me. That's why. Which is, I think, if you're going with an adaptation of the Ovid version, that's probably the softest you can make it by basically being like, it was a consensual relationship, they liked each other, but then the dick move that Poseidon did is not stopping Athena from giving her snake hair.
They did make me a bit uncomfortable with their use of the term survivor, because she did, so it's like, so what are you if you're not a monster and you're not a hero? It's like, well, I'm a survivor. I'm like, oh, that has very specific meanings in current usage.
Yeah, that worried me too.
I will say, I think I can understand, like, where, okay, if we're going to do this, here's what we need to do to make it work after the fact. And the choice to basically make Poseidon chill in this and, like, not culpable, like, not innocent, but he's not the perpetrator, makes sense within the context of, okay, if we're putting this all on Athena, we're just going to make her an angry character, which matches what they do in the rest of the show. There's some pretty consistent Athena slander.
Yeah,
it's
I don't love that.
It's not terribly out of character to the sources, because you read stuff like Sophocles' Ajax and even other plays and other stuff from the classical period. Athena is mean. She's a mean lady. Like, we like her nowadays because of various effects of, like, Renaissance and post-Enlightenment portrayals.
I think we like her because of the Odyssey, where she's an unconditionally heroic, because she plays her role as the guide and helper of heroes in the Odyssey, and, like, Odysseus is her specialist boy, so if you focus on that.
I think the Odyssey coming back into more of, like, the forefront of Greek myth consciousness, as opposed to, like, Ovid, where she is just consistently awful, definitely makes, like, our cultural space more willing to accept virtuous, kind Athena, whereas there is a lot of precedent for Athena being shitty. It's not in the places that we normally look. And again, it comes on really strong in the show, maybe too strong in a way that we're not, like, equipped to recognize and categorize. But
it wasn't in the Riordan books was my issue with it.
It wasn't.
She was fairly freaking chill in the books. So it's if you're adapting Greek mythology as a whole, you can pick and choose which myth you want to use to make any of the gods look like assholes.
I guess the only time Athena in the books wasn't super chill was when she was, like, way overprotective mother-in-law to Percy, where she just had the opposite, like, stay away from my daughter vibes. So it's not, like, completely out of left field, but we definitely don't have in the books the Athena that we get in the show, where she's like actively letting a monster
let you die.
I think the other thing is that we have not yet gotten to see Athena in any capacity. Like, I don't think we saw any goddesses this season, which threw me for a loop a little bit when I realized that.
But I don't think you see any in the book.
Well, that's the thing. So. Like, that's a true adaptation.
Yeah, there's like 80% of the gods that we saw in the show we didn't see in the Lightning Thief.
True. But, like, I don't know. because we hear about Poseidon secondhand, and of course Percy starts off very cranky about him. And,
I love how much he hates him at the start, and that also tracks with the book.
It does, yeah. And the thing is, I was sort of watching the response as episodes went up, and within the first couple episodes, the fans were like, "Oh man, Poseidon's so bad. He sucks so bad in this show." And I was like, we're seeing this from Percy's perspective at his absolute lowest. Can we trust that the show is going to do something? And of course, we get the scene, the flashback scene with him and Sally, which immediately does a ton to be like, oh, never mind, I love this guy. And then we get to see him and Percy hang out, and we're like, never mind, I love this guy. He's dad of the year. It's great. And that's skillful writing to make us do that turnaround from like, neglectful father, let this shit happen to Sally. How dare he? And, you know, all that stuff. But we haven't gotten that with Athena. We have only seen stuff from Medusa, probably the person in the world who hates her most aside from Arachne, and the thing that happened at the Arch, where it's like, I don't think Athena should have done that. I think that was bad. But there is a there are ways you can write this that make this work. She could even be like, I knew that you could handle it if you were really my kid, you know, that kind of shit. Like,
that's true.
There's ways that you can write this, but because we haven't seen Athena and she hasn't had the capacity, I mean, she's not going to be like, I'll justify myself so you like me. Like, Athena's not the kind of character to ever do that. But like, there are ways that this can be written in a way that makes it feel like not a horrible tragedy that Annabeth is connected to her. But we just haven't gotten that yet because it doesn't happen in the book and they didn't add it in the show. So,
yeah. On the subject of monsters, I was a little iffy on how they handled the Chimera at first, and I liked it with the reveal of when it's like the cobra gills kind of like, that's not what they have, but like the cobra part kind of spreads out from the lion's mane. I thought that was a really cool little reveal, because at first I'm like, all right, this is just a lion with horns. Like, I mean, yes, that is kind of what the Chimera is with the scorpion tail, but like, with the snake tail, but like, come on, give me something. But I liked the little like flip out, like the Nedry snake from Jurassic Park kind of effect.
I heard mixed feelings about the Chimera. I heard mixed reviews about the Chimera, because some people said like, oh, that's nothing like it was described originally. And some people just like, actually, that's quite creative. I was just like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's described as having a lion body and head, goat head and snake tail, and instead they were like, we're going to combine all three animals into basically one animal. So it is lion shaped, it has goat horns, and it is snake textured with the hood. I thought it was a clever way to fuse the animals without literally just stitching them together.
Right. But you don't want it to look like one of those, I don't know, like slide across like children's games where it's like, snake pants, lion head, goat torso. Ooh, like it's gonna look so cheesy.
Yeah.
For me, the gold standard of Chimeras is the one from God of War 3. It's just so good as a design. But this one is probably one of my favorites for the inventiveness within a pretty narrow band of possibilities.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, still relating to the show, this question comes from Dorian Gay. To all, what are you guys' thoughts on the Lotus Casino episode of the show? Everyone I talked to about it absolutely hated it, and I wanted to know your thoughts. So, Lotus Casino episode.
I'm in to defend this episode. I know a lot of people disliked this one. There were certain aspects that I didn't love. And I don't know if this is like the Lotus Casino episode's fault. It's more of like what led to it. I didn't love that they like went in knowing what it was right away. Mm. I think that was like less a fault of like episode 6 and more of like what they did in the show. But I still feel like by the end of their experience in the casino, you still got the same like kind of vibe where like you still had the thing of them, you know, falling victim to the actual like mist and myth of it. I didn't love that they knew it right away, but I did like that they utilized the Lotus Casino to give us the Hermes stuff, because when I read the books, you get all of the Luke Hermes stuff at the beginning of book 5. And it felt like compelling, but a little too much like, wow, we're really painting on the Luke backstory early on. Like, let's get him more sympathetic before we kill him.
Yeah,
and
that's always the
move. I like that they brought that in earlier. I think it makes sense for the show to like establish Luke's motive from the jump rather than like him be bad and then be like, oh, and here's a flashback as to why. So I think it worked for like, it will serve the series well. I think people are like misremembering the Lotus Casino chapters from the book. I think people are remembering it in the movies. They're fine. And in the book, people are like, oh my God. Like some of the complaints I saw were people like, they didn't even eat the lotus flower. It's like they didn't in the book.
There's no lotus flowers
eaten in the book.
They put that shit in the movies.
Yeah,
the
and
movies
people
sucked.
Are like, where's all the fun stuff? where they're playing the games. It's like they were in the hotel room for like a good portion of the time that they were in the casino. Like,
yeah. I mean, there was a clay pigeon shooter in the hotel room out the window, which was pretty fucking bad.
Right.
I would have liked to have
seen
that.
We're all being blinded by the Lady Gaga track that was blasting in the background and forgetting the actual events of that chapter of the book.
Right. I think it was so fun. I liked like what it did. I think the ending is so fun. Like the driving out of the parking garage scene is so funny. Like the hardest I laughed in the whole
tense scene in the show.
It's so good. Like
you
shot
can tell
like,
that boy's a New Yorker. Oh,
so good. Shot like an action scene. So perfectly acted and special effected. I loved it.
When they
it.
Got to like the narrow turn to go off, I'm like, we've all been through that. We know what that's like. It's terrifying.
So funny. I really liked it. So I think
it was 20 years ago for me.
It was the most like when I started the episode, I was very much like, eh. But then by the end of it, I was like, they got it. They got all the important parts of Lotus. They brought in the cool overarching series stuff. I was happy with it by the end. And I still think Levitating is a great song choice over Poker Face, because Levitating has a lyric that says, we fell into a rhythm I had a premonition that we fell into a rhythm where the music don't stop for life. And that is very Lotus Casino.
Why would you say something so controversial and yet so brave?
This is not a listener Q&A question, but just like to put it to the group, what song would you pick if you could pick any song to play over the Lotus Casino song?
Every song should be Muse Black Hole in every scene of every movie.
I would posit
the
that
one good
Sweet
thing
Dreams
Twilight did.
Are Made of This could be good.
That's a fun one.
It doesn't bop hard enough, I don't think. Like, we have
to club remix it,
not
you know?
Hard enough. Yeah, we get a club remix. Dom, I wanna actually throw this to you, because in your episode review of the Lotus Hotel, you made a couple interesting points, and I wanna give you the opportunity to talk about them. One being with like the conversation of the movies with the show and the Lotus Flowers, like where'd that come from? And then like in general, how the characters see various threats coming a mile away.
Yeah, because you did touch on that, and that was my biggest complaint throughout the entire series, is that not once does Percy fall into the same trap he did in the book. Every single time, whether it's Procrustes, the Lotus Hotel, Medusa, it was always they see it, and they're instantly like, that's a trap, that's Medusa, I know this story. And like, to be fair, like in the books, they were in the opposite extreme, where it's like, have these guys never seen a Disney movie?
They know everything about myths, but then they can't like put anything together.
That's the problem with the movies, where like how much Percy knows about Greek mythology fluctuates from scene to scene depending on the needs of the
plot. He was like, oh man, I totally killed the Hydra by chopping off all its heads. Aren't I smart? I was like, buddy.
This is like adventuring 101, bitch. Come on.
Yeah. It just got a bit extreme, because like I felt almost like the Disney Plus adaptation was embarrassed of how gullible Percy was in the books, and that almost felt disrespectful to me after a while, that they had to see through every single trap. And it's like, dude, did you read the book?
Yeah.
I guess
they still fell for Chimera in the show, because they didn't really see it coming.
I think
but
they
it
figured
happened
it out.
They were trapped on a train. They couldn't.
They were trapped on a train with her. Yeah.
But in the book, they were just trapped in the arch. Like
true.
It was.
Yeah. So either
not...
way, there was not so much any opportunity to see the trap coming. It was just the trap was there when they started.
Yeah.
But like anything, it's like.
Well, I saw somebody's analysis of this when I was just kind of browsing through the tag on Tumblr as this was going on. Very divisive with the Tumblr community, you may be unsurprised
to
learn.
They're usually so unified.
Yeah, it's wild. But there is this kind of underlying theme with the way that they adapted it for season one, which is the things that go wrong are not our hero's fault. And oftentimes, this is something that actually kind of bothers me. I have already developed strong opinions about the Avatar The Last Airbender show because of the way that they're rewriting the characters to have that be true in almost everything that they do. But in this specific case, I actually think it is tying into the overarching theme of the books, which is the world is not fair and the gods are making no effort to fix that. Because when it comes to the Lotus Casino, like I also noticed like the characters are a little too self-aware about all of the things that happen in the books. And part of that, I think, was a pacing issue. Because when you're adapting a book to an 8-episode miniseries, anything that's a little narrative cul-de-sac that basically starts and ends with the status quo in roughly the same place is kind of a waste of screen time. Mm-hmm. And almost all of the adventures in the book are like, oh no, this is an obstacle in the way that we got trapped in and now we have to escape. And the reward is you get to go back on the main quest.
It's a book of side quests, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that
it's a compilation of short stories that he told his kid as bedtime stories. Like, that's truly the first book.
But, I mean, that's also how Homer do.
It is.
So what that means is that when they were adapting it for the show, they did a lot to sort of pepper in important quest objectives in the side quests. So, like, you have to go to Lotus Casino because Hermes is there and he will give you a shortcut. like that kind of thing. That's better than just, oh, this looks innocent and not bad. I did find it a little bit yeah, that like the characters were like, oh, that looks like an important plot point. Let's go around it. It's like, come on, guys. Shit can just happen. But I think they struck a good balance of making it so that bad things still happened to them even when they did everything right, down to them missing the deadline, which, if I recall correctly, was not in the book.
Not in the book. No. I love that change.
Yeah, and the fact that Ares is the one who directed them to the casino, Hermes is the one who kept them there long enough that till the time mm-hmm. slid away from them, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, they truly did nothing wrong. The gods are the reason they missed the deadline the gods set for them, and they are still going to be the ones who suffer for this. I think the show did a lot of work to make us understand why Luke is like that and why so many people are going to side with him, and also why Percy and Annabeth are not going to side with him. Like, why this truly is a both sides issue. And when it comes to the Lotus Hotel and Casino, I think that they actually did a very good job of specifically executing those themes, even if it was at the cost of, you know, a weird little side quest in the book where basically the conclusion in the book is like, oh no, we fucked up. Like, we did everything wrong and now we're almost out of time. Whereas in the show, it's...
Would that be fucked up or what? Anyway, I'm Rick Riordan.
Yeah, but then the show is like, we did everything right and we're still fully out of time. And mm-hmm. and that's heartbreaking because it really just highlights how unfair this world is for demigods.
Yeah,
this may just be me being too fussy, but like, it bothered me that Hermes was the one that did that, because Hermes is the guy who usually gets people out of being stuck in a place. Like, every time Odysseus was stuck on an island being bonked by a demigoddess, Hermes was the one they sent to break him out of it.
That is true. Hermes is the guide of travelers, but he is also the god of tricksters, so...
And it's also, yeah. I wonder how it will be addressed the next time we meet Hermes, because I'd have to go back to see the exact conversation, but all they said was like, we were with Luke, or we know Luke. And at that time, they weren't anti-Luke. Hermes does know that Luke is supposed to mess up the world because he has the foresight. So maybe Hermes like weirdly thought he was doing the world a favor.
Apollo. No, Hermes is, because Luke's mother, May Castellan, is a seeress. And she had visions of the future that she doesn't seem to remember, but Hermes knows about.
Yeah, my bad.
No,
also, Hermes is crucial to the kickoff of Sea of Monsters because he gives them the Bag of Wind. So they're going to need to talk to him again.
Yes.
And the possible confrontations of like, so why did you make us miss the deadline, Mr. Lin-Manuel Miranda?
I think I will agree with like... with what Dom is saying, is like, it would have been nice to see, I think just the problem, because all of them were them knowing it. Like, if there was one that they like stumbled in and figured out, that would have been fun. But like individually, it's like, do I care that the Krusty scene was wrong? Like, not really. But I think
Krusty. Like, that was the one I was just like, of course, we don't need to have 10 minutes of him going, ergo.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I think on my bed.
I think people just wanted to see, like, Percy figure one out. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling that, but I did like that they did keep the thing true to the book, which is, like, him figuring out it's Kronos and not Hades when he's in the underworld. Like, they kept that, so I felt better. I think I was more like on edge about it, and then we did at least get one example of Percy like being smart and figuring something out. It wasn't exactly like he's fallen into a trap and worked his way out, but he still did like piece together, oh, it's not him, it's Kronos, and I liked that. But yeah, I think if there was one of the things of the classic, like, we goofed, but I totally see what you're saying, Red, and I never really thought of it, of like the next step of like the god screwing people over, because that'll give more credence to Luke's case that the gods suck. So I think it's an interesting move.
And it helps balance out the fact that, like, we get a little bit more looking at Poseidon, whereas in the book it's like, he's not there until the finale where he's like, good job, son. In the show, they add more things he does that are good, because we see him with Sally, which is layered for so many reasons, up to and including, you must burn what you love the most to get the god's attention. And she drops a lit match into somebody else's leftover sundae. And Poseidon is like, did you rang, baby?
That's so good.
So good. So that immediately endears us to Poseidon.
Oh,
immediately.
That's great.
Yeah. And then at the end, there's the add-on that they missed the deadline. The war is going on. And Poseidon is like, I surrender. I wouldn't have surrendered under any of these circumstances, but I'll do it to save my son's life. So we immediately are like, great, two strikes in the good dad category. We are on board. But they need to balance it out a little bit. Otherwise, we'll just be on team like, the gods are great. What's everyone whining about?
That's my issue, and this may just be my headcanon, but are you supposed to like the gods?
I think you're supposed to like Poseidon.
I think there's supposed to be a big 50-50. I always felt very in between of like, they're kind of good, they're kind of bad. And Dom, you had said this earlier, and I fully agree. The movies, my biggest issue with the Lightning Thief movie, aside from many things, like the more like
aside from all the other shit.
The more like big brain issue was that Poseidon just like was way too nice. Like he was helping out Percy all the time, giving him advice, and then at the end, just like you said, he did the whole like, I wish I could have helped you, but I couldn't because I'm Dr. Owen Hunt. Like it just would have been so much better if he was a little bit more of a jerk. And I feel like the show had him like, I would say a little more in the good guy than the jerk category. I'm glad the Medusa stuff made it vague enough where you could be like, maybe he's not super stellar. And with all the grumpy Percy stuff in the beginning, you're like, maybe he's not the best. But
gods aren't humans. That's the thing I think Raiden really understood is that you can't judge a god by human standards. Because, they don't help you out with the situation you're in. It's because they don't necessarily even see the situation. Because they exist on a different plane of existence. They look human, but they're not human. So I think Percy coming to accept that about his dad is that, yes, he cares, he just can't show it in a human way, was something I respected the hell out of in the books. And I don't think any adaptation, Disney Plus or the films or any of that, has really recreated that, because they've always been like, oh, well, it seems a lot more relatable. It's like they do, in fact, love their kids in a very human way, but they can't interfere in a very human way.
Well, the films do the ultimate cop-out where they say that all of the gods are forbidden from talking to their kids, which is, and it's clearly like they added that in because it immediately makes all the gods fine and not culpable for anything, and they get to write Luke as a straw bad guy. But the other thing that happens is that the fucking characters don't consistently remember this fact between scenes. Sometimes we're like, can't believe the gods aren't helping us and won't talk to us. It's like, there's a fucking law on the books that none of them are allowed to, and you all know this because you told me that in the beginning of the movie! Anyway. God, I hate those movies so much.
Yeah, they're bad.
I like that Zeus was just like true to form. Like he was a huge jerk in the show. Like he wouldn't drop the war thing even when he knew it was over. Wouldn't address the Kronos problem.
I did like he rubbed it into. But it's like, now that you've surrendered like a little bitch, Poseidon. Yeah. I guess
we're
gonna
tell everyone.
And
he was like,
yeah, we'll talk with the gods after we announce your surrender. So like, I think we've got a thing of like some gods in the show so far have been huge jerks, and some gods have not been as much. That I think like overall right now we're getting the vibe that like they're more complex. I'm interested to see how the show develops if we're gonna see a little bit more of like that individual people like Poseidon. Maybe that'll happen in Sea of Monsters when Percy's angry that like he claimed Tyson so quickly and stuff like that. Like maybe that'll make us a little more like, what is Poseidon's deal?
God, I hope they do his brother well.
I think they will. I think they will. But it's gonna be they can't like couldn't do worse.
Also, just R.I.P. Lance Reddick.
He was so powerful.
He was only on screen for like 3 minutes, and he fucking killed it.
Owned it. Mm-hmm. Like, so my only complaint was like, I can't imagine him being a fuckboy. But
he nailed it. I'm glad we at least got the scene because it was incredible performance.
No, he never misses.
We are coming up on time here, so I think we're going to do one last question before we exit the podcast stage left. This one
so
comes...
few questions.
So few questions, but so much to say. I think we covered a lot of questions that I just didn't need to ask because we naturally came upon them in the course of conversation. Perfect. So good work, everyone. But this question comes from Obi, son of Obi. To all, you are a god, goddess, whatever, and... You are pursuing a protagonist demigod. What monster or villain do you send after them to hinder their quest?
Oh God, I thought you meant coming after like Zeus, coming after someone like
that's
turning
exactly
into
what I thought too.
No,
I was like, which monster how do you send you to fuck?
Yeah.
We're just trying to murder people.
No.
That's chiller.
Oh, that's so much better. Good. Okay.
So much more PG.
I think the Manticore is a strong case. I don't remember where it shows up. I think it's in like book 3 or 4, but it's a strong contender because you've got the scorpion tail, the bat wings, and then whatever the hell like face it's made out of. It's a great pursuer. It can immobilize enemies, and it bites and claws. So I think that's a good all around choice to pursue a hapless hero with.
Okay, I'm gonna let them think they've escaped by letting them get to their escape boat. And then, boom, Leviathan. you've escaped to your tropical island where you're going to live out your retirement with your money. Nope, it's a giant turtle or something. I don't know. Nice.
I'm gonna go with a Sphinx because not only do you have, you know, the big bestial attack form, but if I'm going with the Sphinxes that I know, which is like Harry Potter Sphinx and Percy Jackson Sphinx, they will ask them a trivia question and then attack them if they get it wrong. So not only are they getting mutilated, but they also have to live with the regret of like, oh my goodness, if I just remembered the capital of Delaware, I wouldn't be dead. And they're just stuck in Asphodel forever, remembering that
Percy
they
Jackson
couldn't recall that it was Dover,
participating on
Delaware.
An episode of Jeopardy and losing.
Oh, I would love to see a Sphinx running Jeopardy. That would be so funny.
It'd be so good. It's
sorry,
it's,
it must be in the form of a question. Prepare to die.
Now I get to eat you.
You didn't say what is, so. Ooh, there's so many good ones. Sphinx
Daily
is
Double.
Up there. I'd kind of been like the echidna version of like if you had the Nemean lion, but it was just a house cat and then it became big lion, be pretty tight. But I don't know that that's what you would, you know, that just means I get to have a the Nemean lion like as a pet, which is more for me than it is really to hinder the heroes.
I think we should have cats with manes. Somebody should get on that.
Yeah.
This is, once again, not
you got a
pair
of scissors, you can make it happen.
Yeah,
no, that's
true.
Just a mostly shaved cat. Yeah. This is different.
This is, once again, not the point of the question, but something I guess to discuss is the comparison between Echidna and the Furies is really an unfavorable comparison to the Furies. I did not find them very threatening, whereas Echidna just really had the energy.
I was a little too distracted by how
doom.
Yeah, I did know, because the Furies, because like Mrs. Dodds in particular, had creepy old lady energy in the books, which I don't think they recreated in the Disney Plus show.
They're just
too glamorous. They really felt like Devil Wears Prada bad guys. Which was a good problem for me to have, because I was just mostly just distracted. But I would send a big snake. I think that there's a lot of big snakes in Greek mythology. They're always fun. Python is the OG, I think, killed by Apollo. You could throw in all kinds of weird superpowers on that thing because some versions, the Oracle was theirs first. So, like, you know, a lot of cool stuff there. Gaia has a tendency to just crank out big snakes whenever she needs to kill somebody. So I think that's always fun.
Respect. I mean, you could always send. Is it Scylla or Charybdis who's the whirlpool? You can always just
whirlpool.
Send a whirlpool after a guy.
Scylla
you know?
Is the lady whose bottom is made of a lot of dogs. Charybdis is. Scylla, she's
well,
like.
Scylla was the one that had like long necks that would snatch sailors off.
Yeah, that's her bottom half.
That's. Yep.
She's a lady with a lot going on the bottom.
Yeah, a lot of top, a lot of bottom.
There are lot of Greek. There's a lot of Greek monsters that are of the format of like top half is hot lady, bottom half you don't want to know.
Wait, hang on. So the Scylla, when she swoops down on Odysseus's crew, that was just a big lady with a.
She's up on the cliff. Yeah. The next reach down from there.
Yes.
That's so much worse than anything I've ever imagined. That's
she's
awful.
Just vibing in there doing a crossword.
Literally in Greek, skilos is just the word for dog.
Oh, man.
They might be more snake-like in Percy Jackson, but it is, I think they still keep it as the bottom half is just lots of heads going like, nah, 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 nah.
Because they skip Scylla in the movie adaptation. I'm trying to remember.
Yes.
In the book, do they fuck with Scylla?
I think they avoid her as much as possible because
she's like yanking people out of the sky.
Right,
you don't
the zombie
like
sailors,
fully see her,
the
but it's more of they're like the heads kind of like swoop in rapidly and pick people off one by one.
It's but also
because she gets Percy Jackson by the backpack and he does a sort of slow motion falling.
Oh right,
and then the boat explodes underneath.
Yeah,
We've all seen it—the exploding boat.
Well, that's why you don't take a fucking Ironside into any situation that requires it not exploding.
Excited for more Clarice in season two.
It's gonna be really fun.
How they did
Clarice
her in the
good.
Show.
Yeah.
We'll have to come back and do a season two episode because we are coming up on time for the podcast, and I fear that any discussion of hypotheticals for season two could run us into double time territory. So I think thank you to our guests for joining us. Many monsters we would send were we given the opportunity to be a villain in the Percy Jackson series. It's a good thing that we're not. Blue, you want to take us out?
Sure. Thank you so much for listening to this bonus episode of the Overly Sarcastic Podcast. We'll be back next week with a regular episode. Until then, feel free to check out our channel for more regular videos and the channels of our lovely guests. Thank you so much, Mike and Dom, for joining us. Mike, real quick, where can people find more of your stuff?
Sure. So you can find The Newest Olympian anywhere pods are cast just by searching for The Newest Olympian. You can go to our website, thenewestolympian.com, and then we're at Newest Olympian on social media. And then if you want to find me individually, I'm at Shube17, S-C-H-U-B-E-S-1-7 on Twitter and Instagram. And then my website is just Shubes, S-C-H-U-B.E-S, if you want to hear about all the other podcasts that I make, because I make, objectively, too many.
Fantastic. And Dom, where can we find more of your stuff?
Well, most of the main things on YouTube, so if you just type in Dominic Noble into the search engine. I have just finished a episode-by-episode breakdown of the Percy Jackson series as it came out. So I say a lot of statements that I then had to eat humble pie on as they did the thing later. But, yeah, I mean, I did it in the character of a snobbish, holier-than-thou former Ravenclaw, so that's
it was a
that's
very funny running bit. I appreciated that a lot.
it was very sort of 2010 YouTube that I was trying to call back to.
Need more of that. Yeah. No, I love character sketch comedy, and it's a shame that a lot of YouTubers have just moved away from it. Yeah,
it's a lost art.
Yeah. Man. Are you really living if you're not comping yourself into the shot wearing different wigs? Like, what's even the point anymore?
Yeah. Well, Terrence's stuff I had to sort of move away from because he also used to be like a casual misogynist and stuff. And I suddenly realized over the years, like, that's not as funny as I thought it was.
Like, he's an asshole, but he's not a dick.
No, but the joke
is
I don't mean it.
Exactly. Yeah. I was being ironically an asshole. Like, let's just maybe tone that down a bit because.
YouTube commentator Terrence probably. No. We love the character. We love redeemed Terrence 2024 edition.
Yeah. Well, since his lord and master creator turned out to be a massive turf, he's kind of had a come to Jesus moment. So,
come to Zeus moment.
Exactly.
Or like,
come to Zeus, yeah. Well, come. Until next time, I've been Blue.
I've been Red.
Oh, I want to claim a color. Sorry. I want to be.
Can I? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I'm going to be beige from now on.
Can I be Tickle Me Pink?
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Great.
Nobody's claimed either of those if you believe it.
Perfect. All yours. And this has been an Overly Sarcastic Podcast.
Woo!
Woo!
Thanks so much for listening to this very special Oops All Percy Jackson bonus episode of the Overly Sarcastic Podcast. Regular episodes will resume on March 20th with another one of our regularly scheduled programs, but if you miss us before then, be sure to check out Overly Sarcastic Productions on YouTube, as well as Dominic Noble and the newest Olympian, as our special guests have a lot of amazing content for you to check out. Got a question for the pod? Head over to Ask OS Pod on Discord for a chance for your question to be featured in a future episode. If you enjoyed the show, please rate us and leave a review on your preferred podcast platform. And if you really enjoyed the show, consider becoming a patron for even more exclusive benefits.